Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Psalms chapter 4. I'm going to call this psalm, Answer Me When I Call. The title of the psalm says this, To the Choir Master with Stringed Instruments, a Psalm of David. So David wrote this psalm. We know he's written Psalms 2, 3, and this Psalm 4. Psalm 1, we don't know, so that's 3 out of the first 4 psalms have been written by David. Let's start now with Psalms 4, verses 1 through 5. David says this, Answer me when I call, O God of my righteousness. That's where I got the title of the psalm, Answer Me When I Call. You, God, have relieved me in my distress. Be gracious to me and hear my prayer. Verse 2, O sons of men, how long will my honor become a reproach? How long will you love what is worthless and aim at deception? Selah. Verse 3, But know that the Lord has set apart the godly man for himself. The Lord hears when I call to him. Verse 4. Tremble and do not sin. Meditate in your heart upon your bed and be still. Offer the sacrifices of righteousness and trust in the Lord. In verse 1, when David says, Answer me when I call, I make the observation that one cannot expect God to hear unless you call out to him. A lot of people will say, well, God is omniscient. He knows everything I'm thinking. What do I need to pray to him for? Well, that's nonsense because God says to pray to him and he wants David to pray to him just like he wants you and me to pray to God. Call out to him. And in this life, there will be plenty of occasions when you need to call out to God because, as you know, this life is very, very hard. Answer me when I call, O God of my righteousness. And then in verse 2, he says, O sons of men. So right in the middle of a prayer to God, David starts talking to men, O sons of men. Sons of men is just the way of saying men. And he says, How long will my honor become a reproach? In other words, he's in a bad way. I don't know what's happened to him here. He had plenty of bad things happen to him in his life. And so people are reproaching him instead of honoring him. That's what it means by my honor has become a reproach. It's turned into reproach. Well, why in the middle of a prayer did David start talking to men? Well, to me, this is not a problem. His exclamation in verse 2 is an apostrophe. It's a hypothetical calling out in derision to ungodly men. Other possible solutions to that problem is that David was quoting a familiar proverb to God. O sons of men, how long will my honor become a reproach? God, you've heard that proverb before. I don't think that's what it is. Here's not a good solution. I'm being a little ironic. This is a congregational psalm in which David turns to address the congregation. In other words, he's praying to God in front of the group, in front of the congregation, and then he turns to the congregation in verse 2 and says, O sons of men, how long will my honor become a reproach? That seems a little insulting to the congregation, if you ask me. Or he could just be complaining to the congregation. That's possible, but I don't think that's it. Some people say that Psalm 4 is a combination of more than one psalm. Well, I'm not going to get into editing problems here. I think it's just as easy to say, he's talking to God, and then he just cries out to some generic, unnamed group of people, when are you going to stop acting like this? And he knows God's listening to him. He knows that he's really praying to God. God, deliver me from these people. These people who love what is worthless and aim at deception. Sounds like the people running my country right now. Who is David referring to when he says, O sons of men, in particular? Well, he could be referring to those who had joined in Absalom's conspiracy. Remember, the last psalm, Psalm 3, was all about Absalom's conspiracy, and it explicitly says that it was about Absalom's conspiracy, at least in the heading it does. And so perhaps David, or the editors of the book of Psalms, decided to group these two psalms together because of that. But it doesn't really matter. It's bad guys who are after David. But David's not worried because he says in verse 3, Know that the Lord has set apart the godly man for himself. Now, is that godly man the godly man in general? It's true in general. Or is he more particularly referring to himself? In my view, he's referring to himself. I'm not worried about these sons of men who are worthless and aim at deception because I know that the Lord has set me apart for himself. And when God does that, he hears when I call to him. If God has set you apart to himself, then guess what? There ain't nobody going to take you away from God's hand. Nobody. That reminds me of that verse that the Arminians and Calvinists used to always talk about. No one will snatch you from his hand in the New Testament. I don't recall where the verse is right now. And the Armenians say, well, that's true, but you can still jump out yourself. And to which I reply, no one refers to you too, because that's what no one means. No one can take you out of his hand. Well, if you've been a set apart to God, you're going to be okay. Now, what does set apart to God mean? NIV Study Bible says that the English set apart comes from a Hebrew word meaning separate, which seldom appears in the Old Testament. The NIV Study Bible further says that, quote, godly people are uniquely chosen among the entire human race and have a distinctive relationship with God. Ooh, that sounds sort of Calvinist, doesn't it? It's true. When you are elect, that means you're chosen, and God chose you for his purposes, which means he's not going to let some of these worthless and deceitful, ungodly men do you in. So if you're a Christian, you should take comfort in that and not start arguing about whether you can lose your salvation or not. Instead, rest in the fact that you have been set apart to God. The Lord hears when you call him, and the bad guys aren't going to get you. This set apart, I don't know the Hebrew, but it sounds a lot like the definition of sanctification, which is separated from the world and set apart to God or consecrated to God. We're sanctified. Of course, sanctified means we're made holy. Now we have an interesting translation problem in verse 4, which says, tremble and do not sin. The first part of verse 4 says that, tremble and do not sin. The Hebrew word, which is translated tremble in the NASB, can be translated in three different ways. Now, the word tremble is ambiguous because one can tremble in awe, in reverential fear, or one can tremble in anger. Now, I have found translations that translate that word three different ways. To stand in awe, to be angry is the second possibility. The third possibility is the ambiguous possibility of tremble, because when you say tremble, we don't know whether that's saying be in reverence and awe of God, or does it mean be angry at somebody? Because you can tremble in both situations, and so that translation is ambiguous. So let's look at three groups of translations. Here are translations that translate the Hebrew word as stand in awe and do not sin. Psalms 4:4. King James, stand in awe and sin not. Psalms 4:4. American Standard Version, stand in awe and sin not. Psalm 4:4. Bible in Basic English, let there be fear in your hearts. And there in the Bible in Basic English, the fear is reverential fear, of course, not servile fear. So that's the first way to translate stand in awe and do not sin. Now here are some translations that translate it as be angry and do not sin. The NIV says, in your anger do not sin. Psalm 4:4 in the Holman Christian Study Bible says, be angry and do not sin. The Septuagint says, be angry and do not sin. And in fact, the Apostle Paul quotes the Septuagint in Ephesians 4:26. This is the Young's literal translation, be angry and do not sin. All the English translations have him as saying, be angry and do not sin, because Paul used the Septuagint. And the Septuagint says, be angry, not stand in awe, not be reverent. And note that all of the translations that translate be angry, they're using the Septuagint. The Darby translation says, be moved with anger and sin not. The Vulgate, the Syriac, the Ethiopic, and the Arabic text all translate the Hebrew word as be angry. So you see where the majority is probably, is be angry. Now what does that mean? Adam Clark says it means if you get angry, don't let your anger carry you to the point of rebellion against God. And that's the typical way of understanding Paul in Ephesians 4:26. As Clark also puts it, don't let your anger make you do anything rash. In other words, control your anger. It's all right to get angry at sin. What does Paul say? Don't let the sun go down on it. In other words, you got to control your anger. For example, I hate to keep bringing this up, but my country is being run by a bunch of lunatics. My retirement is disappearing. Inflation is running sky high, and I'm on a fixed income. And I'm not in the best of moods when I think about the absolute, utter fools who are running our government and who get out and every day advocate for more baby murder and act like people like me that want to preserve a human being's life in his mother's womb, we're against women's rights. So I'm not happy with them. Well, it would be very easy for me to get so angry with them that I can't function, that I lose my peace with God, that I start getting cranky and uncharitable toward people in general. Remember, Jesus said, love your enemies, and that includes these idiots who are running the American government right now. To love them. Ooh, that's a hard one. All right, well, that's the second way to translate tremble, is to be angry. First way is stand in awe and don't sin. Second way is be angry and don't sin. Third way to translate it is the ambiguous way, tremble and do not sin. For example, the Young's Literal Translation, God's Word Translation, the New American Bible, the New American Standard Bible, all say tremble and do not sin. They kind of punt on it because it's ambiguous. You don't know whether that means be angry and don't sin, or you don't know whether that's tremble in awe of God and don't sin. Well, I think as a practical matter, we ought to take it as be angry and don't sin, because that's the way Paul took it. And Paul is an inspired apostle of Christ, inspired of the Holy Spirit to write the Holy Scriptures. And so that's what we have to deal with. So let's just say, be angry and don't sin. David's probably referring to these sons of men who are loving what is worthless and who aim at deception and who are turning David's honor into reproach. Be angry at these guys, David said, but don't sin. And of course, he's still talking. He's not talking to God. He's not telling God, tremble and don't sin. He's talking to hypothetical people who are listening to him. Then he says, meditate in your heart upon your bed and be still. If you're angry, you can't meditate. You can't be still. So get rid of the anger at the evil that's come upon you, and then meditate, ponder on, focus on God. Pray to him personally. Memorize some scriptures. Say it out loud. Pray to him verbally. Verse 5, offer the sacrifices of righteousness. Now, there's two ways you can take that. The NIV Study Bible says, offer a sacrifice that meets the legal requirements laid down by God. The NIV has the right sacrifices. In other words, don't go up there and put a pig on the altar. Obey the law when you're sacrificing. But I thought of another way you could define that, is the sacrifices that a righteous man will make. Offer the sacrifices of righteousness, the sacrifices of men, the sacrifices of which are characterized by righteousness. Either way, the point is fly right. Don't violate the Lord's commands. And then he says in verse 5, trust in the Lord. Trust is just another word for have faith in the Lord. And faith is believing something that you cannot see. You can't see God, but trust in him anyway. You can see these sons of men who are coming after you and reproaching you, and you can't see God, but you trust in the Lord, you believe in God, even though you cannot see him. We turn now to Psalms 4, verses 6 through 8, and we will be finished with this audio. Many are saying, David continues, who will show us any good? Many are saying that. Who will show us any good? Lift up the light of your countenance upon us, O Lord. You have put gladness in my heart, more than when their grain and new wine abound. In peace I will both lie down and sleep, for you alone, O Lord, make me to dwell in safety. So David, as he often does in the Psalms, is talking about all the enemies he has. Kings always have enemies. And people are discouraged around David because they're saying, who will show us any good? In other words, who's going to help us out in this mess? There's nobody to help us. But David said, oh, yes, there is. There's God. So lift up the light of your countenance upon us, O Lord. Countenance means face. The light of your face, when you see somebody with power and love looking at you, it's like they're lit up. Here's how Gill defines God's countenance, his gracious presence, the manifestations of himself, the discoveries of his love, communion with him, the comforts of his spirit, and the joys of his salvation. Ooh, rather have that, even if I have to put up with people attacking me. David says in verse 7, God, you have put gladness in my heart. More gladness than when their, i.e. his enemies, when their grain and new wine abound. In other words, they can have their fat bank accounts, their Swiss bank accounts, their limousines, their fast boats, their airplanes, their private jets, their getaway retreats, their getaway mansions in Hawaii or in the Caribbean somewhere, their trophy wives or their trophy mistresses, whatever. They can have all that. I'd rather have you, God. Because you, in peace, will make me lie down and sleep. Remember, he said, meditate upon God in your bed. In verse 4, meditate in your heart upon your bed and be still. And here he says, in peace, I will both lie down and I will sleep. In other words, I'm not going to lie down in peace and then not be able to get to sleep. With insomnia, I'm going to lie down and I'm going to sleep. And I'm going to do it in peace. Why? Because I'm meditating on my bed, meditating upon the Lord, Yahweh. Verse 8, why does David lie down in peace? For you alone, O Lord, make me to dwell in safety. In other words, I don't need to worry about the sons of men who are turning my honor into reproach, and who are worthless, and who aim at deception, and who want to do me evil. I don't have to worry about that, because God, you make me dwell in safety. Now, one nice thing about the Psalms is you don't really have to make application points. They're obvious. You want to sleep good? Let the Lord shine his countenance upon you so that you can dwell in safety. Ladies and gentlemen, on that high note, we have finished Psalms chapter 4. We are now prepared to go in our next audio to Psalm chapter 5, which I will entitle, Lead Me in Your Righteousness. I hope you stay tuned for that psalm, and I hope you enjoyed this one.